WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going to be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to the first Monday Night Talk in June. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but I'm kind of a little excited because... I got a great show, and it actually just unfolded a few moments ago. Actually, sitting here, joining me, she'll be my very first guest, and I think she's going to be the first of a few guests. We have State Rep Joan Moschino.
Good evening.
I don't know if you can hear it or not.
I'm very close.
Ben Bro got a round of applause here.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
We're anticipating that we're going to have, you're not going to be alone. You said, oh, I am not going to be here alone. I go, well, first I thought you meant like your husband was going to be. I'm like, oh, great, because I always ask, where is he? But no, you said that we may have joining us
Representative Kathy Lanatra and hopefully Representative Allison Sullivan.
Wow.
My new gal pals on the South Shore as part of the South Shore delegation.
Wow, girl power.
Girl power.
Girl power rock. So We're looking forward to talking with you about a number of things. Now, here's the thing. I'm going to have to change the set list a little bit here, as now we have new members in the band. But I think with some of the conversation that we have before us,
yes,
I think they'll be able to kind of join in on that conversation.
Absolutely.
As well. So we look forward to talking to you in just a couple of moments.
Sure.
But then, and I don't know if you want to stay for this part, or if the other, if Kathy and Allison want to stay for it, but we have a gentleman named Luke Salisbury. Luke is an author and an educator who is going to discuss with us a change, is a little bit of a move. I guess Cambridge was the latest community in the Commonwealth who is saying no to the state flag. Now, if you look at the state flag, it's rather unassuming. I actually studied it for a little bit today. But there are some folks who feel that this flag with a Native American standing in the middle of a shield is somewhat offensive. So this gentleman is going to talk about that. You're welcome to stay for that conversation as well if you'd like. And then hour number two, we will speak with Sean Powers. Sean is an at-large town councilor in Braintree, and he is attempting to become the second mayor in the town of Braintree. So he'll be joining me. And then Captain Lou Gaynor, who you can hear here, not a CEO, Nautical Talk.
Yes.
That you get every Sunday at 11 a.m. Captain Lou will be joining us. Captain Lou Gaynor, looking forward to chatting with him. So we get some great conversation. And I will tell you, when I was speaking with Colette, who is fantastic, I was trying to get an expert. I had somebody who was lined up in regards to the climate change and rising seas. I was working on that as kind of like a not only a conversation about what you've been working on since the last time we saw you, which was the last time we talked to you was in January, the end of January.
Right.
I wanted to kind of have, that was going to be kind of an add-on to our conversation.
Because
I
know that's terrific.
That's something that you really specialize in, and that's something that's a passion of yours. Am I wrong?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's one of the premier issues that we're facing right now. And in fact, the 2050 roadmap bill, which I filed, was heard in front of the Environmental Committee on May 14th.
Yeah, that's funny you say that, because I actually have that right here. Is that House Bill 832?
Yes, it is.
I have that right here. Oh, the girls are here.
They were just
kind of tuning up in the lounge.
Good.
We're getting ready to go to traffic. I'm like,
oh, I did surprise him. You should have seen the look.
But I tell you, I'm
face.
Like, oh my god, this is awesome.
I'm like, oh, we should just show up.
That's fantastic.
But that's cool, ladies.
I'm like, oh.
So no, joining us, we have Kathy Lenatra, state representative. Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Yeah, that microphone's live. And right next to her is Allison Sullivan.
Good evening.
Respectively, represented the Allison 7th Plymouth.
Yes.
And Kathy, the 12th.
The 12th, yes.
And I've got to mention you, the third Plymouth. Yeah, I got it. Remember I did the forms for you guys? Mm-hmm. Part of it. So let's do this, Ben. Are we ready to do traffic? We'll do traffic, and then we can kind of dive right into conversation.
Okay, great. Awesome.
With three fantastic representatives. This is great. This is like Christmas for me. So what we're going to do is step aside. We're going to pull over to the shoulder very safely and check traffic for one last time. Being brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at BrennanSmokeShopMA.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Tauntonstown, and Pope's Island, New Bedford. And awaiting us on the other side is Lisa DeMila. Lisa?
Yes?
What's going on out on the roadways?
Well, Kevin, still in the thick of it on the expressway southbounds, inching along from the tunnel down through Savin Hill. You get some running room, but you're right back in it from Granite Ave to the split. Northbound, you're on the brakes, passing Nippon's at Circle, and again approaching the tunnel. Route 3 South is stop and go coming off the expressway, and the northbound side is moving along. I'm not seeing any delays on the Sagamore or the Bourne. Route 24 South is backed up a bit, coming off 93. This report is sponsored by the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. The Crohn's and Colitis Foundation invites you to take steps for cures at a walk event near you. Get started at cctakesteps.org. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
You have a mini bike or dirt cart? Get to the Cranberry Bogs on June 22nd for Goma's Mini Bike Massacre. This year, the theme is Vikings and Barbarians. Come, let off some steam on Goma's property.
It's the 9th annual Goma's Mini Bike Massacre, sponsored in part by Brennan Smoke Shop. Poll starts only 5 to 7 horsepower. Racer registration is at noon or earlier, $25. Spectators, $20. Racers and spectators must sign waivers. Racers must dress the theme. 9 live bands, food trucks on site, BYOB, BYOW. See Goma's Mini Bike Massacre on Facebook, GOMAS. It's a family-friendly event. What could be funner than watching your dad get crushed on the course in the cranberry box? Maybe he ditches it or something. It's going to be awesome. Brennan Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts.
Conquer your enemies and see them driven before you at the 9th annual Goma's Mini Bike Massacre. Ah!
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
That's not really her style. And they all got the same heartbeat, but hers is falling behind. Nothing in this world could ever bring them down. Yeah, they're invincible, and she's just in the background. And she says, I wish they
that kind of ruined it. We thought we would play that because it was like a little, you know, what's great about radio is maybe it isn't great because you have great conversations during the breaks. And like we came up with like, hey, let's play that song because there was a little conversation between Allison and Kathy. You know, I got it. In regards to going, wow, you know, being one of the cool kids.
I know, yeah. I was saying that Kathy texted me and I was able to get her cell phone number, so I was excited. Part of the cool kids club here.
So we thought we would, awesome. But it didn't transition well because silly me had the speakers up and yeah, fed back. And,
it's okay.
We forgive you.
We tried. It's okay.
We woke everybody up who was listening, right?
Ladies, that's welcome right. to Monday Night Talk. Welcome back, I should say.
Thank you.
This is great. So what's it like to have such camaraderie and be able to work together as a legislative delegation representing the South Shore?
So it has been absolutely wonderful having Kathy and Allison on the team. I mean, we have a great delegation on the South Shore, and I love my guys, and they've been very, very good to me when I came on, and I know they're good to Kathy and Allison,
very
too.
Very good,
but
yes.
I got to be honest, it's nice to hang with the girls.
It is.
So what's some of the stuff you guys have been able to do together, work? I mean, it's early on for two of you.
It is, yes. Early on, yes.
So what has, What has it been to work with Rip Moschino and kind of have somebody who's who understands you coming in as a new representative, but as yet is excited to work with you on bills, to support your bills, or ask for your support on her bills?
I think it's been great. I mean, Joan's been awesome. She's, since we got into office, I think same for Kathy, as it is for me, very opening and very welcoming in the sense that, hey, if you need help with anything, whether it be finding your way through the State House or through the bill filing process, just reach out. And it's been that way. And I feel as though that if I did have questions, I can come to you and ask those questions, especially being a freshman legislator.
We do. I've had a lot of questions. I've actually been lost in the State House and have sent, I have her cell phone number, I have sent Joan a text saying, where is this? Because I have been looking for her for 30 minutes. I think it was the business office at that time. But I do. I it's so helpful to run things by Joan when you have a question, and she just answers right away and truthfully, and it's wonderful. And it's great to have Allison on the team, too. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be in Allison's office at the beginning. I tried. I was visiting
quite often.
Did
the D and the R get in the way, though? Or did it have anything to do with that?
No, that was it.
No, because Patrick Kearney is in the office.
Right,
so,
he's in the office.
Yeah,
but her office was right next to the bullpen where I was. She had an office before, so I used
to
hang there. They had a microwave.
Yeah, she came and used that microwave a few times.
I had to heat up my coffee.
She didn't burn popcorn or anything, did she?
No, just the coffee.
Not yet.
I did steal other people's popcorn, though. But so I feel like I'm still part of her office.
Yes,
even
you
though
are.
I don't really belong there.
I think Matt would agree with that.
Yes, I do. I do pop in here and there, and it's right next to Joan's office, so
yep.
I tend to hang in that part of
again that fun conversation I was having with Representative Moschino earlier, joking about the guys and the law firm, which was Cutler, Cantwell, and Coulter.
Mm-hmm.
Say that five times fast, because
yes.
they made a campaign commercial mm-hmm. about, look, we work well together. This is kind of like the new law firm right here.
Mm-hmm. I know, but we don't have a rhyming theme there. Alliteration's not working for us. We're going to have to think of something different.
Yeah, you have a whole legislative session to think about.
We do.
But then that's a promise you guys come back and discuss.
Oh, we would love to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can do this on a regular basis. You know, what's fun while we have you here, one of the things that I had mentioned with Representative Moschino, and it's a prominent bill, and I actually saw somebody on the way here actually driving next to me doing this, is the hands-free bill.
Yes. Yep.
What do you guys think of that piece of legislation? What are the chances of it getting to the governor's desk? Allison?
Well, I think it's very promising that it would get to the governor's desk. Obviously, being a conservative in the House of Representatives, you know, you're hesitant to do something that would restrict your own personal judgment, but you see so many accidents that are caused by distracted drivers. And the unfortunate part is, you know, it's not like the seatbelt bill where it's your own personal decision. You're putting lives at stake when you're making that choice to text while drive or talk while drive. And you're putting people in harm's way. So I think it's very important that we have a legislation like that to make sure that we're thinking about everybody on the roadways and not just the actual driver.
Representative Lenatra.
I agree with Allison. It's a bipartisan thing, and as my family motto is safety first, and this is definitely a safety issue. I have a husband that's in law enforcement and will tell you more stories about accidents where people are texting or even talking on the phone. And honestly, myself, when cell phones first came out, I'd be on the phone in an argument or yelling and using the other hand because I'm Italian. And
me too.
You too, right?
Me too.
So
it's
you
crazy.
Have one on the phone and one in the air. And
you
drive
with
my knee. Yes.
Yeah. So I think it's very promising. I do think it will get to the governor's desk, and I do. And it's a long time coming. You know, other states have done it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, this is not a new bill. And I was on the Transportation Committee last session, so I got to hear a lot of the testimony. And I have to say the personal stories are incredibly compelling. Mm. It's pretty well vetted, and I think everybody understands that we need to keep pace with some of the technology changes. And it really, when you think about the new cars, and you think about, you know, even Bluetooth.
Capability, right?
And the GPS, everybody has it on. There's just a lot going on in front of you when your eyes should be be focused on the road. So, so the House passed it, and now it's being taken up by the Senate on Thursday, I believe, and it's looking promising. Absolutely looking promising. And I believe that, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn, I believe I read somewhere that Governor is looking forward to signing the bill. I think he's receptive
to it. He is in support.
So, yeah.
What are your thoughts as to the progress of the budget for fiscal 20? It's moving along.
It's moving along. Hello, conference committee.
But it's early June. We're not talking like it's like the 29th and it's just getting to committee.
Right. No, they got it to committee pretty well, pretty quickly. And I would say the way I would characterize the House's budget was pretty conservative, small c, in terms of the spending. It's really focused on our municipalities, on local aid, on really getting funding a lot of these programs that are really critical for the services for our constituents. And we were very excited, or I was very excited to get some real full funding around libraries for the first time. That's something I've campaigned on before, and we took some responsibility for putting forward that state line item. So that was really exciting, and I just think it's emblematic of the approach that the chair took this time to the budget, really about services, about municipal local aid, and about people. So it was really kind of exciting. There are some big differences with the Senate, but as with all things, this is just
the beginning
of a negotiation. But there's not that many.
There's not that many of them.
Yeah, so
there's like 160 of you guys in the House.
We can take them, right? Poor Senator O'Connor is probably listening to this going, oh, what's going on?
Well, let me ask you, who have you been able to, in the Senate, who have you been able to have conversations with and work with? Kathy?
I have four senators in my district. So I have Senator Brady, Senator DiMacedo, Senator O'Connor, and Senator Pacheco. So I work very closely. I see Senator DiMacedo everywhere because a lot's in Plymouth and Kingston. And Senator Brady I've been really working well with. And Patrick O'Connor, I taught a class with in Duxbury, lifelong learning semester. We had a great time doing that. And he's been very helpful, too. So, you know, some are Republicans, some are Democrats, but we all really work for our district and try to bring as much back as we can. So it's been very helpful to me to be able to reach out to them at any time that I need with questions. And they've, you know, backed me up, and what I did couldn't bring back to the district, they put in for. So that was very helpful.
How about you, Allison? Any success with working with the other part of government in the Senate?
The Senate to Timothy has been great since I've been elected, reached out very early on, and has been a helpful hand in learning the process of becoming a state legislator. So I do have three senators in my district, but I think I'm very closer to Senator Timothy.
Yeah. So I just have the one senator, Senator Patrick O'Connor.
And every time I turn around, you and he are working on stuff.
We work very closely. As a matter of fact, one of our bills got heard today in front of the Education Committee. It was just a small thing, asking for a commission to study extreme temperatures in classrooms. If you remember at the beginning of the school year, they delayed a lot of school openings because we had such high temperatures at the beginning of September. And we just want to start looking at what that means for schools, what their plans are, how they do building upgrades, things like that, and just to be thoughtful about it. So he was actually in with Mrs. McCarthy to testify today. I couldn't get there, but I submitted written testimony. But we work very closely. We draft a lot together, and we testify together when we can. And actually, we started out our day together with an eighth grade civics class. Hingham Middle School. It was really great to address them together and talk about public service and civic engagement.
Does it get old inviting, you know, the young, you know, the next generation up to the State House and having them in, go, wow.
Oh my gosh, no, are you kidding?
That ever getting old.
I'm
still like that when I'm in there.
Seriously, I walk up the hill and I come around the back by Ashburton Place, and that's the yellow, the house part of the building. And every time I walk around, I look and I'm like, oh my gosh, I work there. It's very exciting. So it never gets old. We just had Cohasset Deer Hill School there, and the fourth grade class, and they had a ball. The kids love it, and their energy is totally infectious. It totally sets you up for a great day.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And you were mentioning, have you had any students up from
your
district?
I had the Duxbury High School hockey team.
Oh, boy.
They were up. They were fantastic. Fine gentlemen, I have to say. Very mm-hmm. polite. It was great. In Middleborough, their fifth grade classes are coming up. I believe it's next week. So that's exciting. And then I have a Girl Scout group from Kingston coming up.
My cousins are on the Middleborough trip, so I'll be there. I'll be joining. I'll be tagging along.
Okay,
so
two days.
I think you have 3 days. So
I
two
do.
Out of the 3 days, I'll be there.
Great.
Now, have you had a chance to invite any classes up?
So I did have the East Bridgewater co-ed cheer team. They were the state champions. So they came up and visited. And then also, too, just individual families have come up from the district. Eagle Scouts have come up. So it's
been... Can you just attend something?
Yes. Yeah, we just had an Eagle Scout.
I pay attention sometimes.
Me too. Yep, Justin Mescal just got the honoring of an Eagle Scout. So that was a ceremony that I was able to attend on yesterday, actually. So he graduated Saturday and had an Eagle Scout ceremony on Sunday. So he was a very eventful day.
It was a busy
weekend. Yeah.
It was graduation. I saw you at the Whitman-Hanson Regionals.
Yeah, I went to Whitman-Hanson.
And you did Abington?
I did Abington. Yes, I did. Yeah, unfortunately, I couldn't make East Bridgewaters, but... hopefully I'll be there next year.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was nice. Yeah.
You rotate them.
Yeah.
All
happy, happy faces graduating. I remember that time, you know, being 18 years old and ready to finish high school.
What's that like?
It was yesterday.
Right?
Hey.
I'm sorry.
It was just yesterday for law school.
That's true. Allison did just graduate from law school, too. So big congratulations to Allison.
It was exciting. So.
How about your district? Any graduations you get to attend this year?
I would have loved to, but I was actually in Georgia. One of my sons, Nicholas, graduated from infantry school and is now going to be an Army Ranger, so he'll
go into
the 75th Regiment.
Thank you for
Ranger,
the
75th Regiment. Yes.
Absolutely.
So that's where I was.
I like it.
I actually managed to attend the morning for Hingham High School, and I excused myself and got down to the South Shore Charter School. Rep DeCoste was there as well.
Yeah.
He's such a good friend to them. So I was able to hear their ceremony, but then I had to leave early and scoot back to Hull for 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I attended Hull's.
Yeah,
the only one I couldn't
day.
Make it to was Cohasset. It was spot on conflict, and Hull invited me first. So
yeah, the charter school is like Abington, and Abington invited, so it was just like that torn time right there.
What do you do?
Right.
It's tough.
It is tough. Yeah.
That's
why
you rotate. You try to get everywhere, but with the parades, the Memorial Day parades,
yep,
they were
rotate.
All at the same time.
Yeah.
So I went with the first one that asked, and then next year I'll just...
Or you get someone else to do it. So you got to get someone else to do the other town that you can't get to. So my plan is to kind of pass the torch again back to my father and have him do Abington.
Nice.
And then I can do Whitman and East Bridgewater next year.
Excellent idea.
She's got a plan.
Yeah.
Mine were actually all in a row.
So You were very busy that day.
I started with Hull because I actually speak at the Hull Memorial Day. Mm-hmm. And then I scooted down to Hingham, and I just have to sit and attend that one. And then we got over to the end of Cohasset. It when the parade hits the harbor, I caught the last bit of that. And then we went to Linden Pond. So I actually made it to all three of them.
So I wish I could have, but East Bridgewater and Abington were at the same exact time. So I was able to make Whitman, speak a few words at Whitman, and then run over to Abington.
Yeah.
I think at one point I'm running out of the car.
But
trying
they're
to catch.
Great ceremonies.
They are great ceremonies.
She lucked out, though, because years past, Allison, I'm going to warn you. usually, it's a great day.
It is a great day.
But they go like 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'll stretch into three. Come on, you sat through them. And it depends on the class size.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 1:45. It was an hour and 45 minutes
for
at Whitman. So you have I know because I was on production crew. And I'm like, yes.
I know.
It was daylight when we finally
I was surprised,
up.
Too. They had a pretty big class, graduating class.
A little over 20.
I mean, Abington was about an hour and 20 minutes. I was kind of shocked at how quick the graduation went by. So... But I heard Whitman's on a very tight schedule. They know what they're doing over in Whitman-Hanson High School.
It's interesting you say that because I talked to Dr. Chris Jones. I says, so what are we looking? He goes, 1:45. I didn't mean to. I laughed at him. I'm like, yeah, okay. No, really, how long? He goes, no, 1:45. And it was like 1:42.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow. I was like, I was impressed. And I walked up to him. I was like, I'm sorry. you were so right. Because they cut down on the speeches.
Yes.
And again, they moved everything.
Great speeches, though. Excellent speeches. I mean, at least in my towns,
oh,
even
well.
The student speeches, I mean, were great. Very inspiring.
These kids were so self-possessed.
I am so impressed.
Really,
with them.
Just both their the words, what they're actually speaking, but also how they get up there mm-hmm. and deliver it. I don't know that I could have done that
at 18. Yeah. I probably definitely couldn't have done it.
It's really amazing. It's very impressive. Really exciting.
Now we had mentioned a little bit early about Denim Day.
Yes.
All
denim. I thought you said denim.
Denim. No, not denim mask, but denim.
So
denim.
I don't know. I might have been the first legislator to do her maiden speech in jeans.
And jeans. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. I decided to do my maiden speech, and it was actually a perfect day to do it, I guess you could
it
say.
It was a perfect
on the
day to do
that
it.
I did it. Yeah.
What was that
a
day
good
like?
Talk.
What was that day like, ladies?
You know, it's very poignant. To actually go onto the floor of the House of Representatives, which is very formal, wearing denim, wearing jeans, wearing a jean dress, I think it really sent a very powerful message mm-hmm. To a lot of our colleagues. And what I really love is that everybody comes together for the photo, and it was really a special moment of solidarity and just understanding that we have to start doing things to combat sexual violence on college campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
it's a hugely important issue. There are a few bills that are coming up this session, and really, it's something that's critically important. We hear a lot from
our constituents. Yeah,
our constituents mm-hmm. on it. They have a pretty powerful group of women that have really just leveraged their voice to come in and share their poignant stories and to really talk about strategies that could make a difference. And I think that's the most important piece. So, yeah, powerful.
Kathy?
It was very powerful. For me, it was very powerful. It was the first time, and where it came from. So the story of where it came from, a rape case was overturned, and I believe it was in Italy, was overturned because they had said the female's jeans were so tight that she had to have taken them off herself. And that's where the story came from. So it was a very powerful day, and as Allison said, she gave a very powerful. Yeah.
That was my next question. What did you think of her speech?
It brought me to tears. It brought me to tears, and I can't look at her now because it will again. But she's a very strong woman, and proud to be sitting beside her.
Yeah.
Okay, we are speaking with three of your legislators here from the South Shore. My left to right, I don't know what it is on your radio dial, but Allison Sullivan, Kathy Lenatra, and of course. The culprit, Joan Moschino, for organizing. This is fantastic. Like I said, this is great, and it gives an opportunity for the folks who are listening to hear from all of you simultaneously. Whether you're here on a show like this, or if you are doing regular time speaking with the folks in the news department or other radio shows here, it helps with transparency mm-hmm. to kind of get the word out. One last little thing before we take a small break.
Sure.
Does everybody want to talk a little bit about the state flag and whether we should do something about it, or are some folks kind of, not so much? You're welcome to just kind of sit here. It's okay with that. I offered you, Alice, if you want to stay for Mr. Powers, you're more than welcome to.
Thank you.
Actually, you all can if you want.
We can stay. Just as long as we're home in time for the Bruins.
Right.
I know.
Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask this, and that is, there was a bill that I think you were working on in regards to campaign financing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to have your children be taken care of. Did you all have a chance to see the bill or talk about it?
I'm a co-sponsor of that bill.
So what it does is it authorizes a candidate to expend campaign finances on childcare.
Childcare, yeah.
So the idea is that if you're a parent and you want to step forward, so we have equality.
Mm-hmm.
We can all pull papers and get ourselves on a ballot. But do we have equity where we really have a meaningful opportunity to run? And some people they need that help
mm-hmm.
because it's so demanding on your time.
Mm-hmm.
You can't always rely on families and friends in those moments. We've all learned that one.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just a small thing that is meant to remove a barrier from the system to running, and hopefully will lead to more diverse candidate pool. Because we often think about diversity either as gender or as race, but it's also generational
mm-hmm.
and it's also socioeconomic. So this is really just a simple bill to do that. And we had a very good conversation with Allison's father about whether or not we could do that, and we decided to just keep it simple, authorize it, and leave it in his good hands to do the regulatory making and how we might administer it. So it had a hearing.
How'd it do?
Oh, I think the chair is very excited about it. They asked some great questions, and he's looking forward to moving the bill. So it'll be exciting.
In other words, a lot of support at that hearing as well. A lot of people came in support to testify for that.
Yeah, it was great to see all of the people come out. The Mass Commission on the Status of Women has made it one of their top priorities, so which is exciting.
Kathy, anything you want to talk about in regards to any successes during this, at least this budget session that you were able to kind of?
I do have a bill I'd love to talk about briefly. It's the voter safety bill. It's a refile of mine, but it's really getting some momentum this session. I'm very excited. It's had its hearing. I had a lot of people testify. I had the harbor master from Weymouth came, someone from the Coast Guard came, and I've met with the chair of the committee several times. We're going to meet with the colonel of the environmental police, so I'm very excited about that.
And I think my 7:30 guest would probably be Captain Lou Gaynor, who does nautical talk. Would be, if you get a moment to get on his radio program,
maybe
you
can
chit chat about it. Any successes you want to talk about to this point, Allison? Even though I think you were on the show last week.
I know. I was like, I'm trying to think, what haven't I talked about?
She was on the show last
week. You know, I think with just the district priorities that I was able to receive during the budget debate, I think is really great, especially being a freshman legislator and being able to secure, you know, $50,000. I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but as a freshman legislator, it's a pretty hefty amount of money. So having that ability to do that, and also just going forward, and I think I spoke about the governor's dangerousness bill that I am very passionate about, mm-hmm. and I believe that is something that we really need to get to the House floor and vote on, and to make sure that we're protecting the Commonwealth from very dangerous people. Also, to some of the legislation that I filed, I'm looking forward to hopefully getting a chance to vote on that on the House floor as well.
Get in the trenches.
Yeah. Oh, she's already in the trenches. they hit the ground running. They both are doing great.
And do you like to stand back? Oh, look at them.
Oh my God, they're amazing. They're absolutely amazing. They've got it going on.
We'll have more amazing in just a moment. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, we'll speak with Mr. Luke Salisbury, as this is a bit of a movement in regards to maybe replacing Massachusetts state flag. You don't want to miss this conversation. We'll be right back in a moment. You're listening to 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The family that brought the 54-foot mahogany bar to McWiggins Pub in Whitman now brings a dining experience like no other. The patio at McWiggins. Dine al fresco while watching one of the 755-inch monitors or the 9-foot video wall. You'll enjoy a different dining experience at the patio with a totally different menu. Eat, drink, and socialize at the patio at McWiggins. And don't forget McWiggins Pub next door, located at 546 Washington Street in downtown Whitman.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, we return for more Monday Night Talk. And, of course, we have three fantastic legislators who are hanging for more conversation. Of course, led by Joan Moschino. I only say led because she was the one, I think, who helped cultivate this, or did Kathy or Allison have something to do with it?
No, it was me.
Sorry. Okay. No, but it's fantastic. Please, more surprises.
I said, can we swarm him?
Absolutely.
I'm all about the bees. Let's do it. But we have a gentleman on the phone line. His name is Luke Salisbury. He's an author of four books, including the book No Common War. And Luke's joining us to talk a little bit about the Massachusetts state flag. Now, some of the information that I pulled off the internet is that this flag was adopted back in 1908. It's on a field of white with a blue shield emblazoned with an image of a Native American who's holding a bow in one hand and an arrow in the other. The arrow is pointing downward, representing peace. The white star represents Massachusetts as one of the original 13 states. Around the shield is a blue ribbon with the motto, "By sword we seek peace, but peace only under liberty." Welcome to the show, Luke. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good. I think you're talking about King Philip's War.
Maybe I am, but just so you know, I do have a couple of legislators who by happenstance, are here. But they're not necessarily, they may chime in, but they're just kind of here hanging out on the program. Okay. They just got done with their, so if they, you know, if they support you, they might speak up. If not, they're just listening to the conversation. Does that sound about right?
That sounds fair.
That sounds about fair.
Who are the legislatures?
You have Joan Moschino representing the 3rd Plymouth District.
Hello.
You have Kathy Linatra, who represents the 12th Plymouth District.
Hello.
And then you have Allison Sullivan representing the 7th. And unfortunately, I think, weren't you a professor at Bunker Hill?
I certainly was, and I live in Chelsea.
Oh, yeah, none of these folks from up in that. They're South Shore gals.
Right, other side of the world.
But you know what's really cool? They got sworn in at the beginning of the year, so they really are bona fide legislators.
Well, I have this novel, No Common War, which is a Civil War novel, and it's based on my great-grandfather, who was wounded in the cornfield, the Battle of Antietam, which happens to be the bloodiest day in the bloodiest war in American history. And in the very middle of the book, the heart of it is, and this actually happened, these two Salisbury brothers came down from northern New York. They'd been in Washington. They go up the day after the battle, find their sons among 4 acres of wounded and people having arms and legs sawed off, just hell itself, and each talks a surgeon out of amputating. And the surgeon says one of these boys will live if he has a constitution of iron, and the other will die in 10 days, which is exactly what happened. But in the course of my researching this book, I knew that the very first Salisbury and his son had been killed by Indians in King Philip's War in 1675, but I did not know till I did research that they had killed an Indian in Swansea on June 20th, 1675, after church. They found three Indians asking Mistress Salisbury for whiskey. The Indians were unarmed, but they had a gun, and the father told the son to shoot, and he did. And that is the spark that started King Philip's War. So I really feel I have a personal stake in all of this. And I might add that after the Indian was killed, the other Indians took him away. People went to 3 blockhouses in Swansea because they knew there was going to be trouble, because King Philip had been organizing Indians for months into a confederacy, which didn't work, to try to drive the English out. He was a little too late because there were 50,000 English and only 20,000 Indians left. But after 3 days, the two Salisbury's, father and son, and some other men went out to get food that had been hidden because food was running out in the blockhouse where people had gone, and the group was caught by Indians. They were killed, beheaded, and their heads put on stakes overlooking the Kickamuit River.
All right, well, I'm going to stop you for half a second. So what's this got to do with the replacing the flag?
A whole lot.
Oh, okay.
A whole lot.
Well, just so you know, you got 9 minutes to make your point.
Okay.
What is your understanding about the move?
Well, what I just wanted to say was, in the course of that year, half the Indians were killed, and this is something a lot of people don't know. The other half were sold into slavery in the West Indies. So I don't particularly feel strongly one way or the other, but if someone did feel that, you know, given this history, that maybe that Indian shouldn't be on the flag, or he shouldn't be on the flag as having been defeated or whatever, I can see why someone would think that.
Okay. So speaking with your representatives, the thought was, is because we get the 400th anniversary of the Mayflower landing approaching next year, there is a push to replace the Massachusetts state flag because of its depiction of a Native American. Now, there are currently 30 communities, municipalities, that have endorsed a state bill to replace the state flag and the motto. And Cambridge was the latest one. It was the 5th largest city in the state. Went even further, actually, earlier this month, where the city council chamber members labeled it offensive and approved a proposal to remove the flag from council chambers. Give me your thoughts on the flag. Why does the flag And ladies, if you want to chime in as well, do you feel that the flag needs to be replaced? Is there an item in the flag that is offensive that should be omitted and changed? We'll start with you, Luke.
Well, I think Native Americans ought to be asked, what do they want to have put there?
Okay.
Because, you know, it really was a genocide, largely through smallpox in addition to the war. I mean, the history of Indians in New England, it's awful. And those who are left, if they want to complain about it, I think we should listen.
Okay. Are there any images? I've heard some people who have said that the sword that is shown above the shield and above the Native American can be seen as being somewhat offensive. Is it that? Is it a matter yet that there is a depiction of a Native American on the flag?
No, no problem with that, but the whole sword, the whole war and the fighting, I mean, yeah, peace came, but peace came at the price of terrible killing. By the way, in that war, 1 out of 10 colonists was killed. That is the bloodiest war per capita on American soil. I think that's a story that we ought to know a little better, perhaps.
Okay. Representative Moschino, any thoughts on the legislation? Have you heard anything in regards to the legislation or have any thoughts on it?
So I hadn't really heard anything until very recently about it. And when I took a look at it, I'll be honest, one of the things that I asked was about the sword. And the response I got from one of our colleagues was that the sword pointing down was meant to represent peace.
Just like the arrow in the Native American's hand.
Right. Everything's facing down, and that was meant to represent peace. But I think it's like any symbols, any graphics that we use, that they're all contextual. So what it was back when they put the shield together and put the flag together, I'm sure has evolved over time. So, I mean, I'm always open to those conversations, but it'll be interesting. This was all new to me, and I only heard about it recently, and I think it was because it was in the Globe. It must have been that they reported, was it Cambridge?
Cambridge, they had recently, they're asking to actually... They approved to have the state flag removed from council chambers.
Yeah, that was the way I found out about it. So I don't know about my colleagues, but I actually have not heard about this much at all on the...
Yeah, I think this is kind of new to them as well.
Kind of new.
A little new, I will say. I mean, just recently, but didn't realize it was this far down the pike, I guess. Or is it? I haven't heard anything about it.
Again, the information I have, 30 municipalities of 351 are saying, yeah, we're not happy with the state flag.
Well, the parallel I think that we have to draw is, what do you think of a Confederate soldier standing in front of a courthouse? I mean, we have blood on our hands, too. And if you want to know about King Philip's War, the Harvard historian Jill Lepore has a terrific book called The Name of War. And you'll learn everything you wanted to know about it and some things you probably don't.
Well, let me ask, I can ask everybody this if they want to answer it. So if we were to... change out the state flag, what would be
appropriate?
What would be appropriate? What should be the process that we go about to, if there's an actual movement here, a push, what would be a good idea for a replacement?
I mean, are the 30 other communities saying what they want the flag to be changed to?
No, just to remove the cover flag
just
that we have.
Just remove it.
Oh, so the bill doesn't even suggest what the process would be.
I'm sure that there are probably 345 other pages that I haven't had a chance to
read.
I'm in the middle. They gave me 48 hours to read it, and I got to page 5.
Well, for my part, the interesting thing about this job is you never know what is going to come across your desk in any given day. And, every bill with 6,000 bills got filed, every single bill will have a hearing, so it'll be interesting to see who actually comes in support of a change and what the arguments are that they're making it. So all we can do as legislators is listen. So,
well, I vote for putting a cod and a Red Sox on the field.
That's a great...
No, hold on.
Wait a second. What about the Bruins?
I was just going to say, what about the Bruins?
Oh, the Red Sox are here first.
Oh, wait. What about the Patriots?
Whoa. Well, it's fun. By the way, do you remember when the Mass Pike first opened? It had a picture of a pilgrim hat with an arrow through it.
All right, some of us are actually. Yeah.
You remember that on the signs? And I think there was some objection to that.
I don't think I realized life until like 1973. So that's just me. I'm just speaking for myself. Anything you want to say in closing as we're wrapping up the segment? We're speaking with Luke Salisbury, who's kind of giving us insight or his thoughts on
Well, I would just like to say that the other connection to my novel, No Common War, is one of the characters, who was the one who was wounded at Antietam, is kind of obsessed with the story. It really bothers him. And it, which is my situation, is what happens if you find out there's something in your family that's really terrible? You know, slave owning, Indian killing, and, you know, writing a novel is one thing. And if anyone is interested, I will be, there is a launch for the book at Porter Square Books Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Porter Square in Cambridge.
Very good. Well, Luke, and do you have a website? Might as well throw that in.
Yes, I do. Luke Salisbury Books.
Excellent. Luke, thank you so much for being a great guest.
Well, thank you, and good luck to the legislators. I'm glad I don't have to make the decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, there he is. Luke Salisbury, our guest. Closing thoughts on that segment, ladies?
Very thought-provoking. Yeah.
I mean, I can't wait to hear what the testimony would be for it and or against it. I think you need to hear both sides of the argument in order to make an informed decision. So
it will be an interesting hearing.
It will be.
I look forward to attending that
Me
one.
Me too.
Yeah, that's for sure.
No, we'll sit together.
No, see, I would wonder who actually authored it and who some of the co-sponsors were who got involved with it.
That's a new one
what the reasoning behind it.
Yeah, that's a new one to me.
Me too.
Again, my disclaimer, as I said to you earlier, Representative Moschino, was that I was going to have to try to get somebody in to talk a little bit. This is before the surprise, and your other two colleagues here coming in, which honestly much better, was to have somebody in to talk a little bit about rising seas and, what's going on with our climate, because it's real.
It is very real.
Yeah. You ladies want to stay, or do you want to kind of head off? I know. Again, kudos to Rep. Moschino, who this is her second time here. She was here earlier, and she also was just coming from the Hingham Library.
Yes, I did my office hours.
She did her office hours
at the Hingham Library. Yes.
Website, folks want to find out more as to what you're doing. You got office hours this Friday, right?
Yes, at Linda Pons. JoanMoschino.com, and we post all of our office hours, publish them in the paper. So just go to the website, and you can always figure out where I am. Or you can call the office, 617-722-2320, and ask for Colette, and she always knows where I am.
Tell Colette I sent you.
I will.
Kathy?
And my website is KathyLinatra.com, and you can reach me actually through my website or the same, believe, phone number that you in 23.
I gave my SIT and revenue, and that's the number for the revenue committee. Yeah.
I don't know mine offhand, but I will. I do have a new legislative aide that is starting on Wednesday.
Oh, congratulations.
Very excited about that.
Yeah.
His name is Christopher Jean, and he is a recent graduate of George Washington University, and he will be at all of my constituent hours at the beginning so he can meet the community and help. So I'm looking forward to that.
Representative Linatra, thank you. And
so we're still working on ours. Ours is under construction a little bit. We've hit a few little bumps in the road for our website, but you can reach me at the State House, 617-722-2014. Curtis is a great legislative aide.
He's just
like Jones, knows exactly where I am when I'm there. And everyone, don't steal Curtis. He's
not up for grabs. That's my big worry, is that someone's going to hire away from me.
Yeah, yes. But
this is the one thing, my time in doing the show and being a journalist and reporter is that the State House and the Senate, fantastic when it comes to
the staffers.
The staffers are really bar none. I can't think of one time. I'm sure it happens. I've had one or two times where maybe somebody who's kind of new and kind of getting acclimated, but then from that point forward, they were fantastic.
Yes.
So.
Oh, yeah. And it's a tough job.
It's demanding.
It's a very demanding job.
Yeah. They always get the phone calls before we do, and so they're kind of, you know, ciphering through and trying to figure out what the actual issue is that somebody's calling about, because sometimes even the constituent doesn't really know what their huge point is or the main point is. So
or what the opportunities are.
Right, exactly. So having a staffer and having that ability to kind of help the constituents, maybe in a very emergency situation, if, you know, we're, whether it be in hearings or whether it be in session, and having that ability and their knowledge is by far tremendous.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I want to thank the three of you for being here. It was fantastic. Definitely, maybe we'll do it again during the summer.
Sure.
We'd love to do that.
Love to have you, and we'll do like a casual Friday thing on Monday. Right, we'll hang out.
I mean, it's casual Monday on Friday.
There you go.
Friday, Monday for
me. We'll all wear jeans next time.
We will step aside. Hour number one in the books coming up next. Hour number two, when kicking it off, will be at large. branch counsel in Braintree, Sean Powers, is next. Here on Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Yes, it's springtime. Time to awaken. Time to consider our relationship with our planet. The average American drives a distance halfway around the Earth each and every year. If you headed east, you're in Italy, just south of Mount Vesuvius. If you headed west, you're at Midway Islands, just south of the Empire Sea Mountains. The point is, volcanic eruptions above and below sea level are tough on cars. So if you got a broken windshield, Tiny comes to you, replaces your windshield, insurance pays. I'm Peter Brown. Usually, we get to where you are just about right away. Just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
Hi, everybody. Mike Joshua here, host of Americanorama on WATD. Americanorama features music from Wilco, Nico Case, Sturgill Simpson, Della May, Jason Isbell, Margot Price, Iron and Wine, Lucinda Williams, The Lone Bellow, as well as the twangier side of rock acts like My Morning Jacket, Band of Horses, Neil Young, and Tom Petty, with a dash of classic country as well. Americanorama, Monday through Thursday night at 10 p.m., only on 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, that was fun. As we actually have one remaining representative. Allison Sullivan is staying. As she should, as she was helping to, she was banging doors over the weekend.
She was.
With at-large counselor in Braintree, Sean Powers.
Kevin, how you doing?
How you doing?
Great to be here.
I haven't seen you since, since the night that Allison got
That's
elected.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Sean was there. Sean's a great man.
I actually was going to say Allison's a downer note when they, like, at 1 minute after eight, when they announced that Elizabeth Warren had beat Jeff Deal.
Mm. Yeah.
Then they announced the big news where Allison secured the seventh.
We were excited. That was a great night. And Allison is doing a great job as state representative for her towns. And you're also one of her constituents.
No, I'm not.
You're not?
I'm actually Josh Cutler's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I work in her district.
Ah, that's right. That's right. So.
You get some stake in the game.
Job. Yeah, you have some skin in the game there.
I do, just a little bit.
Excellent.
So why do you want to run for mayor?
Why do I want to run for mayor?
Right out of the box. Why do you want to run for mayor?
Great. Well, that's a great question. Look, I've lived in Braintree my whole life. I bleed Braintree blue. You know, it's where I grew up.
You're a womp?
I'm a womp. I'm a proud womp. Went to school there. Went to the Ross School for elementary. Went to East Middle School and graduated from Braintree High School, class of 1999. So we're hitting the big 20-year reunion, which is next Saturday. So I'm already feeling old at the ripe old age of 38. But I've been involved for over 20 years. I started off as a town meeting member when I was 18, and then 2 years later, folks took a chance on me, and I was elected as a school committee member at the age of 20. And then 9 years later, they took another chance on me and elected me as their counselor at large, where I've been serving them for the last almost 10 years. So,
what do you feel you've accomplished during your time in office as a member of the council?
Sure. Well, I think when I first got on the council, we were just coming out of the housing crisis. So the crash had happened in 08.
Oh, my God.
And then 09 was the election. So we had to manage and make priorities. Worked very closely with Mayor Joe Sullivan, who actually was our first mayor, as you mentioned. He helped usher in the new form of government with a charter change from a town meeting board of selectmen to a mayor council, which wasn't a very easy thing to do, implementing a new government, and then managing through that financial crisis. So we had to set priorities and make some tough choices to keep our town moving forward. And I'd like to think that I rolled up my sleeves and worked with them, to accomplish that.
Now, while I have a representative here, would you like to ask Sean a question or two? Anything you want to kind of pose to him?
So, Sean, you we were able to go out door knocking over the weekend. What was the response like?
That was one of my questions.
Yeah. So we were door knocking in East Braintree, down by the Watson Park, which... gorgeous views of the Fort River. It was a gorgeous day down there. Folks that I had the chance to talk to on their doorstep, they're concerned about growth and overdevelopment. They're concerned about traffic. So one of the things we have to do is update the town's master plan. By updating our master plan, we can plan and manage growth so that it works for us. And we have a stake. And we have a roadmap to guide the town over the next 10, 15 years. You know, the current master plan is from 1998, so it's 21 years old. It needs to be updated. We need to come up with ways to tackle our traffic issues. Braintree is a great place to live. It's got a great location, but with that come challenges because of the amount of traffic that we see on a daily basis. So managing our traffic through a townwide traffic management plan, it seems like it takes forever for folks to get from one point to another point in town. So that was a big issue. The other issue that I talked about with folks, was the compressor station that is being proposed on the Fort River. I'm very concerned about that. That whole area is already designated an environmental justice area because of the existing industries in the area. You have the Citco oil farm there. You have the Four River Shipyard, which was there for decades. Mm-hmm. So there are some, and you have the current power plant that's operating in Weymouth. So you have some very concerning environmental issues, and a compressor station in that heavily populated area is just something that we can't allow to happen. So I'm hopeful that the new information and the new data that came out is brought forward back before the DEP. They review that information and then they deny the air quality permit.
Do you feel you have a distinct advantage as somebody where it's not like you're a district counselor,
mm-hmm.
you're an at-large counselor, which mm-hmm. is almost like you're kind of like a mayor in your own right, because you have to run in the entire town.
Yeah. So I always tell folks that my district is the entire town of Braintree. there are issues that are affecting South Braintree that are different than East Braintree or North Braintree. But in the end, we're all the town of Braintree. So there are growth issues, there are traffic issues, there are housing issues that affect the entire town of Braintree. Everyone wants to see affordable housing in Braintree, so folks that are over 55, can downsize and stay in Braintree. They've lived here their whole lives. They have, kids that have gone to the Braintree Public Schools. Their friends and neighbors are in Braintree. They want to stay in Braintree, but they need to downsize. So we need to increase our over 55 housing. That way they can downsize and stay in Braintree. And when they do that, that frees up that, three-bedroom house that they had for their kids to a new young family that wants to move into town, but it doesn't overpressure our school system, so our school system can manage the the amount of kids that are enrolled. When I graduated from Braintree High School, there were about 4,500 kids in the school system. Now there are almost just under 6,000. So in 20 years, the enrollment has increased 1,500 kids. And we have some space needs issues at our school. So those are the types of issues that, as I'm going door to door meeting folks, we've had coffee hours, you know, those are the issues that they're talking to me about.
Turn it over to my guest co-host, Allison Sullivan. Follow-up question here?
It's like a law school class, Allison.
Well,
like,
I know. I'm trying to think.
Cross-examination. You know. She just graduated from law school, so congratulations, Representative.
Right. Thank you.
Yeah. New England School of Law. There's the crowd.
There's the crowd. The crowd goes wild.
Yes. You know, here's the thing is I've gotten to know Sean over the past, my campaign at least, and Sean's a great man. I think he'd be great for the town of Braintree as mayor. So, of course, I definitely have a little bit of bias in me.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was able to go door knocking with you this past weekend, and the amount of people that actually approached you and just walking down the street, because we were right by the ball field, so people were coming and going. I believe that people are very much excited to see you get out and run for office. And I think anybody that gets out and run for office because of, you know, I've experienced it, it's a risk you take.
Sure.
But you spoke about the schools. You spoke about the roads and the and the traffic. What's another priority of yours that if you were to be elected, what would your top main three priorities would you say would be? You know, within your first term?
Sure.
That's
so
the question.
Yeah. So I think the first thing we have to do is we have to update the town's master plan. You know, again, because we need to build a roadmap for how our town is going to grow.
Need an outline.
Over the next 10, 15, 20 years. If we can plan for the future, we can manage growth so that it works for us. We need to create a economic development coordinator. Braintree, with its location to Route 3, 93, 128, it's accessible by the Red Line, the commuter rail. We're able to offer stable utility rates with our water and sewer, and we have Beld. We need to attract tech manufacturing companies, med device manufacturing companies that want to hire high-skilled technicians to work in their factories that pay between $75,000 to $100,000. We need them to come to Braintree. I think our commercial tax base is... I think we've probably reached our max with retail, with the South Shore Plaza and some of the other shopping areas that we have. So I think to expand our commercial tax base, we want to get these high-tech companies to come to Braintree. And the benefits to the local economy when we're hiring these folks that make a pretty good salary will pay tenfold in the local economy. So if we create a economic development coordinator, they can work with our regional partners, our state partners, and leverage all the benefits that Braintree has to offer. But we also need to include residents and current business owners in Braintree to meet with these folks and say, we're doing business in Braintree, you should too, and here's why. And to lure those companies to Braintree, because all these, you know, global companies, they want that fancy Boston address, they want that address in Cambridge, but the real estate prices are just getting crazy in those zip codes that, you know, maybe they want to look 12 miles south to Braintree.
Okay, we're speaking with Braintree at-large counselor Sean Powers, who is a candidate for mayor. He's hoping to become the second mayor. Of Braintree. What are you looking forward to if you are successful? Mm-hmm. Talk to me about having a working relationship with some of your neighboring communities, whether it's Weymouth or Braintree. And I think you probably know both of those mayors fairly well if they're successful come this fall.
Yep. Yep. Tom Koch's a great mayor. Bob Hedlund's a great mayor for their respective towns and cities. I'd probably look to work with them in continuing to oppose the compressor station. Mm. Both mayors have already come out against that. I know there is talk of continuing to pool some legal resources in opposition to the compressor station. I think we could look at a... on a regional basis, the traffic that affects Quincy also affects Braintree and also can affect Weymouth. I think we can talk about some regional infrastructure needs with respect to, you know, we've already seen what's going on down the landing. There are a number of challenges currently facing the landing with parking and traffic. With some of the developments, I know the town is diligently trying to work on those issues now. But, you know, I think there are some regional purchasing programs that we can engage into to help, you know, on a regional scale, get the cost down, you know, per expenditure if you're buying it, you know, with a volume-based system.
Talk to me about how important it is to have a good working relationship with the town council, because I've seen communities where you will have the makeup of the council, of a particular council, could be... What's the word I want to use here? You want to have a good working relationship. I've seen it where it's where the relationship between a mayor and a city council or a town council, if they're not working together, things get stalled out.
They do.
And any progress you may see goes by the wayside because there's more political feuding that's going on. Mm-hmm. How important is a relationship with the town council?
I think it's imperative. I think it's imperative to have a great working relationship with our town council, with our school committee members. The mayor serves on the school committee.
Right.
I think that starts with transparency and accountability, that if councilors know that a mayor is being transparent with them, that the mayor is accountable for his or her actions. I think that starts off by to develop a level of trust. We've all seen the horror stories of when councilors and mayors are at a level of dysfunction. But again, it starts with transparency and accountability and having honest conversations with people and to build a consensus. I think a successful mayor is a uniting mayor, not a dividing mayor. You know, the tactics of dividing and conquering just at the end of the day don't serve the citizens well.
Allison, would you like to ask another question?
So obviously I follow you on social media. You are very, very active, and you've been active even before deciding to run for mayor in your community. And I applaud you for that. You're very active in running in road races and just staying in touch with your community. I know you're very active on the fireworks for, I believe it's the 4th of July.
It's coming up June 29th.
Right. So I know that, you know, just because I know you. So what has the response been from the local businesses, the small business owners and the in that community?
That's key.
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm working very hard at is to maintain my accessibility, and how I do that is through social media. So if we're constantly putting out posts on issues and positions on issues, folks can comment, they can send me Facebook messages with questions, they can comment, you know, again, or they can email me at seanforbraintree@gmail.com or check out our website at seanforbraintree.com. So I think using social media to put forward our ideas, our plans, our thoughts, and then hear back from folks, I think is very important. I'm sorry, the last part?
And then the businesses, what
yes,
about the local
okay,
businesses?
I'm sorry. Yeah, so we have three squares in Braintree. We have South Braintree Square, Braintree Square, and Weymouth Landing. Have met with folks that operate businesses in all three, and one of the things that, you know, is kind of holding back our squares that we have to do a better job at is parking. We need to expand our parking in all of our squares. If folks know that they can find a place to park, they're more likely to go to those squares. I think we need to work with all of our property owners in our squares and create an incentive program that, you know, you can get a low interest loan if you want to redo the facade of your building, or if you want to change something on your building. And that way we can work with them to kind of make a more uniform village looking square. Right now, you know, just through the course of time, the buildings all look different, and it's a hodgepodge. So I think that as folks start to make improvements to their buildings, we can work with them, give them an incentive to improve the outside of their building, so our squares look more of that village type setting. But we have to expand our parking because, you know, folks aren't going to go to our squares if they can't find a place to park. So
you mentioned social media, and social media is becoming a tougher place to navigate these days. How are you and your campaign working to get the word out there and be able to take questions on yeah. without having to go through the different individuals who are seeking to troll
sure.
and try to knock you yeah. off your stride.
Yeah, look, transparency with the community is key. Accessibility with the community is key. Folks can message me, email me, call me with any types of questions on issues that they want. We're putting out ideas and thoughts every day on our campaign Facebook page, and folks are allowed to comment, they're allowed to ask questions, they can even like it, they can dislike it, you know. But we want to run a very transparent, substance-based campaign that's based upon the issues that we think are important to Braintree.
So I would ask you, the one thing that a lot of communities are dealing with these days is substance abuse. Mm-hmm. How has Braintree dealt with the substance abuse sure. issue? And what's under a Powers administration, what's your plan to at least keep moving forward to helping those in need?
Sure. Well, it's affected me personally. A friend of mine that I went to high school with unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. I think there isn't a single person that doesn't know someone that has been affected by it, whether it be family or friends. There is a substance abuse partnership here in Braintree that has key stakeholders that meet to find ways to develop programs, to educate parents, and to offer resources to parents that might have a child that is dealing with a substance abuse issue. Reaching out to the younger generation that might have a friend that they're unsure of might be on some type of drugs. There is a substance abuse coordinator position that is full-time in the town of Braintree that would continue under a Powers administration. We would look to work with our state partners. One of the big things that state and regional folks are trying to get a grip on this is the sharing of data. Mm-hmm. So the amount of calls, the amount of uses of Narcan, you know, we got a presentation from the fire department one time, and you can literally see the overdoses on a map through time lapse roll up our streets from one section of town based upon just where a particular drug dealer was dealing their drugs. And it just rolls up through town. So the sharing of data is key to our state partners and to our regional partners. That would continue. And it would just be ensuring that we have the resources to, one, help folks get the immediate treatment that they need, and then, two, the long-term substance abuse treatments that they need, and then to offer resources to their family and friends that are their first line to getting them help.
Talk to me about education. How is the Braintree school system? How is it set as far as funding goes? Whether it's new buildings, is sure. there any kind of plan in the Powers administration that would look to do what it can to make sure that you have enough teachers, mm-hmm. that you keep class sizes small? You know, all the things yep. that residents want. It's yep. almost like having a paved street. Same
yep.
thing.
Yep. So when we were out door knocking schools, and these are folks that don't have children in the schools, we're very interested in talking about schools. Currently, East Middle School is being renovated, and there's an addition going on to that. South Middle School is hopefully going to be the project going to seek community approval this August, and then we have submitted a statement of interest to the Mass School Building Authority for Braintree High School to determine the long-term needs of our high school, whether, you know, we build new, smaller, because the current high school was built in 1972 for over 3,000 kids. Mm. There's only about 1,600 kids that are in the school now. So, you know, the town's going to have to make some choices as to what we do with Braintree High School. And I think that having those open and transparent and honest discussions with parents, with teachers, with the students of our schools, you know, we can continue to work with our members of the school committee and the members of the school building committee to determine the long-term needs of our schools, whether it's, you know, do we have a conversation with renovating our schools? Do we build new schools? All that's going to be on the table. So with respect to this year's budget, we approved the budget. It's about $70 million. It was almost a 5% increase
There are a lot of pressures that are put on our school budgets with respect to special education,
unfunded mandates.
You know, we really have to continue to work with our state partners, in case the representative's listening, that, you know, unfunded mandates are something that are a challenge for our schools, including Braintree. You know, the enrollment is, you know, the demographic and the makeup of our schools are changing. So we have English language learner programs, and, you know, that all takes money. And, you know, we would like to have the state come in and help us so we can achieve those goals.
Okay, we're speaking with Sean Powers. He is a candidate for mayor in Braintree. He is currently an at-large counselor. We just got 3 minutes left.
Wow.
That's it. I can't. Time flies when you're having so much fun. before I ask you your website or any information, sure. Allison, do you have any final questions? It's okay if you don't.
The prosecution rests.
Well, I'll tell you what.
You know, I think with time we'll tell with how dedicated and loyal Sean is going to be to the community in Braintree. I'm excited to see this campaign trail play out.
Oh, she does, because you worked on her campaign.
I did. So I did.
You know,
I was the one.
I know how many doors I need to knock, because that's how many doors you knocked in mine.
I was the one that was, you know, telling her to get out there and shake hands and meet people.
And here's the fruits of your labor.
And here's
she's
doing a great job.
She's doing a fantastic job.
She's a terrific state representative.
Anything I haven't asked you, but it feels kind of important to those who are listening right now, to at least getting an idea of your message or an understanding as to what your focus is if you are successful in November.
Sure. So I think the next mayor is going to have the chance to offer some new leadership to meet the challenges and to help, you know, plot that course that Braintree wants to go on for the next 10, you know, 12 years or 15 years. So, you know, look, we have a lot of challenges ahead of us. We have to manage our growth. We have to manage our housing. We have to create more affordable housing so it works for us, you know, here in Braintree, so we can be in a better position to deny those 40B, you know, projects that I hear folks are constantly concerned about, and rightfully so. So, you know, we can do that by creating an affordable housing trust that other towns have done, whereby we have Braintree residents sit and manage our affordable housing needs. You know, so it fits into the character of our town. So it works for us. But we're going to run a very open and transparent and substance-based campaign. They can learn more about my campaign at seanforbraintree.com. So they can plug in their email address and get all the campaign updates. So we're going to be out there. We're going to be going to every neighborhood, and we want to talk to as many people as we can.
Coming to a door near you.
That's
Sean
right.
Sean Powers. Sean, thank you so much.
Thanks,
for coming
Kevin.
In.
Always a pleasure.
We are going to step aside, and the final segment is on deck, as we will speak with the one and only Captain Lou Gaynor, host of Nautical Talk Radio, here every Sunday. We'll be back in just a moment. You are listening to 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The family that brought the 54-foot mahogany bar to McWiggins Pub in Whitman now brings a dining experience like no other. The patio at McWiggins. Dine al fresco while watching one of the 755-inch monitors or the 9-foot video wall. You'll enjoy a different dining experience at the patio with a totally different menu. Eat, drink, and socialize at the patio at McWiggins. And don't forget McWiggins Pub next door, located at 546 Washington Street in downtown Whitman.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Representative David DeCoste and Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15 here on 95.9 WATD.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
WATD.
Hey, we're the number one FM station on the South Shore.
We would have not seen anything bad then.
So where is WATD?
We're located at Marshfield.
Begging, but now I'm on bended knee. Well, I gotta get a move, got my hat off the rack. I got a boogie woogie like a knife in the back. So be my guest, you got nothing to lose. Won't you take you on a sea cruise? I said, Louie, Louie, baby, said Louie.
And that is the intro to the one and only Nautical Talk, featuring the one and only Captain Lou Gaynor, who is here. He is my final guest of the evening. And as I've tried to do during my tenure here on the microphone at WATD, is to try to do a little bit of cross-promoting with other radio programs. Yeah, we have other conversations with elected officials and stakeholders, and we have fun guests, but there's nothing more than talking with the folks who are in this building in Broadcast House, and none more than someone like Captain Lou, who not only does a show here, but he and I are in the trenches usually during primary night and sometimes on election night. I give you the one and only Captain Lou, who you hear every Sunday morning at 11 a.m.
Ahoy, mateys.
Captain, we'll get you into the marine industry. What got you into boating?
Well, I've been boating since I've been 5 years old. I actually fell overboard when I was 5 years old and was able to swim ashore. In the best thing I remember about that day is how my father took his paper bills and hung them on the clothesline to dry out.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I've been boating a long time and active. I was Commodore of my yacht club. I'm active in many different organizations, including the Coast Guard Auxiliary. I have 30 years retired experience in the Coast Guard Auxiliary. And I'm a member of the Mass Marine Trades. I'm proud to say that I was one of the founders of the Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary. I worked with Gary Studs, Jerry E. Studs. Its official name is the Jerry E. Studs National Bank, Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary. And I'm happy to say that I was also involved with the creation of the Boston Harbor Islands National Park. And in my hometown, I had it designated as an official Coast Guard city. And when I applied for that, that took an act of Congress and a signature from the president to make it official.
That's fantastic.
So, am I involved in marine? Yes, I eat, sleep, and drink boats. My wife and I have been fortunate enough to cruise up and down the East Coast in our own boat. I've done yacht deliveries for many boat dealers, and I just love it.
Anybody who tunes into your show every Sunday can hear it. Your program exudes how much you love the ocean, the industry, whether it's just folks who are boating, whether it's folks who are out there and making it a career by fishing, if they are even doing that off of the East Coast with all the sanctions and all the federal government regulations that are put in place to put catch limits in place for certain species of fish. What got you to be vocal and come to a signal like WATD close to, what, 30 years ago, maybe more?
It was about 27, 28 years ago, yes. Yep. What really got me involved, I had a friend of mine who was doing Calling All Sports on WBZ. His name was Norm Reischer. I don't know if you know him.
I do.
Knew him or not.
Great guy.
Norm invited me to a live broadcast at a sports bar where there were Bruins and Celtics players. And during the show, I was just fascinated. I was a talk show junkie anyway, and I owned property down on Cape Cod, so I'd always listen to WATD. So I was a fan of WATD as well. And at that night of that sports program, Norm Reischer introduced me to the audience, and then at the end of the program, he asked me a trivia sports question that I did not know the answer to. And I said to him after the show, "Why didn't you ask me something about boating?" And all of a sudden, the idea clicked in my head. This was so much fun, doing a live broadcast with these professional athletes, eating, having fun, jokes. And I just said, you know, there's money shows, there's real estate shows. I think I'm going to do a boating show. So one day, on my way down to my property on Cape Cod, I stopped by WATD in Marshfield and spoke with a Mr. Edward Perry.
The old troll of rock and roll.
And Ed, for the life of him, could not figure out what my ulterior motive was. He said, "Are you a boat salesman?" I said, "No." "Are you a boat mechanic?" "No." "Do you have a boat dealership?" "No." He says, "What are you doing?" I said, "I just love talking about boats." And originally, I was creating a boat show. And the irony of this whole thing is that I very rarely ever talk about boats. We talk about what goes on in the ocean, mm-hmm. what people do on boats. Mm-hmm. But we don't talk about any specific boats or boat brands unless they make the news.
What was the earlier versions of your show? Because I'm sure, like any program, your show over the years has evolved and changed, whether you're talking about certain issues, mm-hmm. you know, whether it could be with, you know, a harbor or a harbor master or things that happen out on the water. Mm-hmm. How did it start?
So
for
I used
you?
To feature live Coast Guard reports regarding search and rescue.
Wow.
I also did fishing reports for the local bait and tackle shops. Then the show just evolved into me attending fishing hearings and government hearings. And I learned very quickly that some of these fishermen, commercial fishermen that had maybe an eighth or a ninth grade education, was out debating and made more sense. They had more common sense than the government officials who they were arguing about. And it was just so sad to me that the government workers were getting paid to do their job, and the fishermen had to take time off from their job to be at these hearings. And you know, it's a funny thing. My wife explained it to me. They create crises, and if there isn't a crisis, if they really solve the problem, they'd be out of job. So the government people have to keep a crisis going.
And so your job has been over the years, or the conversations that you've had, is to have some of these fishermen on, talk about some of the things that they're fighting.
So it became very controversial. I had no idea that my radio program, which was supposed to be a boat show, was going to be so controversial. And I actually was starting to receive some threats from different people.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Especially regarding the regulations and prices of the fish and what they can catch and what they couldn't catch. And the fishermen were becoming more and more violent as well with the government workers because they were being, you know, I put out of work. They were being put out of business.
In your 27, 28 years of doing the program here on WATD, have things taken a turn for the better? Do you feel as though you've been able to shed light on issues that maybe the common person doesn't understand and wouldn't understand unless they tuned in on a Sunday morning?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the fishermen get a chance to express their points of view as well, which, you know, eating fish, it's a healthy seafood. It's a natural resource. And we have so much fish. And I tell you right now, we have more fish in the ocean right now today than any other in all of our lifetime. And yet the fishermen can't catch the fish. And that goes right back to with the sharks and the seals. And I have a regular routine that I do. Why are there so many sharks? Because there are so many seals. Why are there so many seals? Because there are so many fish. Why are there so many fish? Because the fishermen can't catch them.
Sounds like a riddle. It definitely does. It sounds like a riddle. You know, it's something that you and I have in common. I believe that you and I have both featured individuals, captains from the very popular show Wicked Tuna.
Oh, yeah. Wicked Tuna, even The Deadliest Catch. I feature a lot of people who are on the National Geographic Channel.
Did you ever think that boating and this way of life would be something that would become a reality show?
No, I wouldn't think that at all. And I'm told with the Wicked Tuna folks, for instance, the prices that they're paid is not reality.
I was going to ask that of you. that's very intuitive of you, because I was going to ask, because I see how the whole folks who don't watch Wicked Tuna, which is on the National Geographic channel, and when it's in season, it's usually on a Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they go out for days, and the idea is just try to land a tuna, land a couple. Mm-hmm. And it's a competition, and it depends on the size, depends on the quality of the fat in the tuna itself and the weight. And there's a combination of that. That's the formula to be able to, at the end of the season, depending on how well they do and how they're, when they go to the dock and the fish is assessed, how they're doing financially.
And you notice they never argue about the price either. They just accept what they said, because the price is artificially high. It's really for the TV show. And
Disappoint you, though, as somebody who knows what's going on? Are you somebody you're watching and go, that's
it doesn't real. Disappoint me, but it does disappoint the tuna fishermen who are out there trying to sell their fish, and they hear these monster prices that they're getting on the TV show. And in reality, they're only getting $5-6 a pound.
Interesting. Who do you feel, who has been the best conversation you've had of all of them, whether it's Dave Marciano, whether it's Paul Hebert?
Well, Dave Marciano I know personally, because he used to be a commercial fisherman. He is a real fisherman, unlike some of the, other guys. I mean, they are all real fishermen, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But Tuna Dark Conference, he's an airplane pilot by profession.
Right.
But Dave Marciano, he used to attend the fishing hearings where he was being told can't go fishing anymore. He's very emotional. I remember one time when they actually were ready to call the federal marshals in, they escorted him out of the building. And he's a great man. He's a great
guy.
And
I know that we've watched over the past season and a half, I think he's got his daughter's involved.
Yeah.
Next generation.
And Tyler has a sister involved.
Right. And we've seen his boat sink. He's had issues with his boat.
Oh,
we've
yeah.
seen Tyler have issues with his boat. And seeing somebody who's doing well in the standings, and I'm using air quotes, folks at home, you can't see that. But when I say standings, is that artificially inflated, money amounts that they're making with the fish that they're catching.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting.
And of course, there's a Marshfield family, the Hebert family from Marshfield, Paul Hebert and his brother. So we have local fishermen. It's a really, really, they say it's the most popular reality show on National Geographic Channel.
I think that's true. And I am a big fan of reality shows. And it's interesting we're talking about reality shows, because we actually have, we're scheduled to next week speak with Nicole Terry. Do you know that name?
No.
Not Nicole Perry, who does a show on Sundays.
You had me thinking.
Powerful Women. Nicole Terry is somebody who actually was on Naked and Afraid. This is where folks will venture out for 21 days without a stitch of clothing on in some of the most horrendous environments on the planet. It's temperature, bugs, you've got creatures. She'll be on next week joining us.
Oh, wow.
And she'll be the third Naked and Afraid alumni to be on. The most recent we had on was Laura Zara.
Will she be clothed?
She will be clothed. She's actually someone from Hanover.
Ah.
And I think she's also going to be doing a 40-day, it's called Naked and Afraid XL, where they go out for 40 days. And you got to catch bugs and critters, and you got to live off the land, and you got to be able to make fire and do drinking water. So it's definitely an interesting when it comes to reality shows. And I have asked, because I'm one of those people like going, okay, is this real? Does this really happen? And I've been told by the folks who do the Naked and Afraid, it's pretty much weird. It's pretty much real. So, but to have you say, those catch limit, when they're catching it and there's no, I didn't even think of that. I have to watch this the next time when I'm watching Wicked Tuna to see if in fact they're like, I'll take that.
They never argue about the price.
What's the biggest fish you've ever landed out on the water?
I'm not a big fisherman.
You're not?
No. But the biggest fish I've ever caught was a bluefish maybe a striped bass. But the bluefish, my wife likes bluefish, so I like catching. But, fishing makes a mess of the boat. I'm more of a docking and dining type of a guy.
Are you really?
I do docking, dining, and we like anchoring out, swimming, and, having some dark tails.
I like that. What's the furthest you've ventured? Have you gone from?
Oh, we've gone from Maine to Florida, Maine to the Keys.
What's that like?
It's unbelievable. It's an education. And my son was fortunate enough when he was younger to go with us. We used to work around the school vacation times to, so that my son could go with us. And it's an education for him. You see history, you learn all the different ports, and you just see so much out on the water.
What's the biggest boat you've had? Are you a guy you like to sail, or do you like to have a combination of sail and maybe a
No, I'm a power boater. I really don't know how to sail. I tried sailing once or twice, and it's just, it's not me. I'm a power boater.
Okay. Okay, we're speaking with the one and only Captain Lou Gainey. You can hear him every Sunday at 11 a.m. Please tune in. I know when I have an opportunity, whether I'm here working in the newsroom, award-winning newsroom, I hear the award-winning Nautical Talk Radio as he does regular reports. What's that like? I see now and then you will do reports, especially if it's something that's happened out in the water.
Well, every week we start off with the nautical news. That's the first 10 minutes of every program.
What's that like to gather news. That?
It's hard. And I try not to plagiarize. I do try to gather my own news. I try to interview the people who are local. I try to interview the people and get firsthand information from them. It's hard, and it takes up a lot of the time. And truthfully, that's one of the reasons why, you know, some people have tried to compete with me. They've tried to copy what I've done, even using my music, some songs that I play. And it's because it takes so long to gather that news and make the show happen. It really takes me almost 25 hours a week to make that one-hour program.
Yeah, Uncle Eddie doesn't understand that, because the same with me. When I tell him how many hours I put into putting a show like Monday Night Talk together, it takes time.
It
takes time to talk to guests, to do your research. You want to be able to have a good conversation.
And it's a one-man program, you know, because we do our own, we have our own sponsors, so we have to make our own commercials.
Yeah, what's that like? Because you do a great job going
it's,
out.
I've been fortunate enough that, believe it or not, three or four of my every week sponsors have been with me from day one for 27 years.
So that's pretty good.
It is pretty good.
So aside from...
And if I can give them a free plug, I'll be happy to do that.
If you want, go ahead. Yeah, who are some
New
of the
England,
folks?
New England Propeller from Plymouth, Atlantic Boats in Wareham, South Shore Dry Dock Marina Marshfield. Those are my three regulars have been with me for a long time. And now I have regulars that stay with me, not from the beginning because they went in business, but like New England Burials at Sea.
Very nice.
You know, so
how important is it to you that you have local businesses believe in what you do as a talk show host and what you provide for material on a weekly basis?
It's very important. And I'm always, always amazed when they say, hey, Captain Lou, somebody just mentioned your name, came in here and spent, you know, $500 in our store. It just overwhelms me when I hear that. And when I get emails from my listeners saying how many people, you know, they talk about what I say on the radio, it overwhelms me. I'm flabbergasted. I just can't believe there were so many people listening, and not only to WATD, but to Nautical Talk Radio.
When I tune into your show, I hear you do interviews and you attend conferences, and I hear the governor on just as much on your show as I hear him on my show when he calls in.
And if you go to the State House at all, you'll see Senator Bruce Tarr has a picture of me.
Tarr Talk. Great guy. Bruce is a great guy.
And you'll see he has a picture of me in his office in the State House.
Oh, you know what? He needs, it's like a salt and pepper shaker. He needs a picture of me up there right next to you. Captain Lou and his mate, Kevin Tocci.
And, of course, another good buddy of mine was Senator Bob Hedlund.
Oh, yeah. So, who, of course.
Maybe I can make friends with Vinny DiMastita because I am a Republican.
You should. Vinny is, I'll tell you, one of the most personable guys. I'm surprised you haven't had a chance to cross paths with him.
I know. But having said that I'm a Republican, you know, Jim Cankwell from Scituate, when he was a
state representative.
Yeah. He was also a good friend of ours. So we do cross parties.
How important is it to have conversations? There are those who say, yes, I am for, you know, I'm for those people who are out and have spent a career making a living out on a boat, or, you know, there are elected officials who say, yeah, that's what I do. And then there are those who actually do it and they don't really have to say anything. What's it been like over the years to kind of sift through the folks who do and the folks who don't?
Well, in real life, I was in the real estate business as a Boston landlord, and I had a deal with rent control. And when I go to those hearings with the fishermen and the landlords, never realize that these government people, they don't care what your bottom line is or how much money you're losing. They just don't care. Mm-hmm. They want to accomplish their agenda. Like with rent control, it was a terrible situation. There was no new investment. We couldn't make money. We couldn't even pay our real estate taxes with it. As a matter of fact, in some cases, I had tenants subletting their apartment off of rent control, getting more money from their roommates than I was charging for the rent for the apartment. But I identified with the fishermen in the same way. They were going to these hearings, they were pleading their case, they were saying how they were losing their homes, losing their boats, they couldn't pay the fuel, they had a cutback on crew, making it a very dangerous situation for them. It's very difficult if you're a fisherman trying to work alone, and they couldn't afford help. And the people just did not care. They went in one ear and out the other.
You had mentioned something earlier on in the program talking about plenty of fish, and you know there's plenty of fish because you've seen an increase in the seal population,
mm-hmm.
and sharks. We're seeing more and more sharks.
And just so you know, one seal eats 30 to 40 pounds of fish a day, one seal. And they said there's 70,000 seals, you know, on Cape Cod National Seashore.
Any thoughts? Have you found yourself having more conversations about shark sightings? We know that right around the corner, the boating season is ramping up. Everybody's popping their boats in the water. Is this going to be more of a conversation you'll be having again this year, seeing that we've seen not only shark sightings, but we even had a fatal shark attack?
First time since 1936, yep. I think.
Yeah.
And the other man, there was another attack that would have been a fatal attack if there weren't nurses on the beach to respond to give them first aid. So yes, it's a big problem, the sharks. And people down the Cape, they don't know what to do about it. And we have detection buoys, even in Marshfield. There are detection buoys, but it only picks up the sharks that come within a few hundred yards of that buoy. And they're not necessarily great whites, but I think in Marshfield or Plymouth, there might have been 5 sharks detected by the buoy. Not that far offshore. And you know, they say, well, go in the water knee deep. Well, some of these sharks, they can wiggle in the mud and be half their bodies out of the water. So you could be in ankle deep water and be attacked by a shark.
People don't realize that.
No, they don't.
So is it safe to go in the water, you know, if you're not someone who's in a boat safely?
I don't know how to answer that. You have to, you know, there's nothing, you have to be careful wherever you are. Let's face it, you know, you have to be safe crossing the street.
What's this time of year? What is your radio show like? What are we going to hear in the coming weeks on Sunday morning starting at 11 a.m.? Some of the conversations you're going to have. The folks might want to tune in, folks who are in the fishing industry or folks who are boaters or who love boating.
Well, of course, July 4th is a big day for the USS Constitution, Old Ironsides, the turnaround. We do a lot of maritime history, and there's certainly no shortage of that around here. And people will hear a lot about the Coast Guard. They just opened up Station Scituate now. It'll be a full-time station. That's a seasonal station. And that comes under the jurisdiction of Station Point Allerton and Hull. And people don't realize the area of responsibility for the station in Hull. It goes from Nahant on the North Shore to Plymouth on the South Shore. So you'll be hearing about that. One of the biggest topics, or the hottest controversial topics today, is about the wind farms. Mm. The wind farms off of Cape Cod and Rhode Island. They're building an industrial park with these wind turbines, and what it's going to do to the fish, the drilling of the holes for the monopoles that hold the turbines, what that's going to do to the whales drive and the other marine mammals, nobody really knows. There's not enough study being done, but the rush is on so that these foreign corporations can get tax incentives by the end of this year. And it's just, everybody says we need more studies. Even the Coast Guard agrees we need more studies. And you know, some Coast Guard are worried about the air rescues flying in the fog. We don't know what the noise from the spinning turbines is going to do to the fish or the marine mammals, never mind the drilling of the poles. There's a lot of controversy here. And there's electrical cables in the trenches in the mud. And they produce heat, and they also produce electromagnetic fields. What's that going to do to navigation equipment? And people are also worried about ice flows in the wintertime. If ice should knock one of these turbines down, it's going to go right across the channel. And the big thing for the fishermen is that the construction, the maintenance, is going to mean that they're going to shut down these areas where the fish are. Fishermen won't be able to fish while they're doing construction and maintenance.
My goodness. We can hear all this information in these conversations on Nautical Talk Radio.
Yes, you can.
We just got a couple of moments left here. Any stone we haven't turned over while I've had the privilege to sit here and talk with you?
You know, there's been a lot of movies made about the Coast Guard, and one of them, the most recent ones, was made right here in Marshfield, mm-hmm. Coast Guard's Finest Hours. I had the pleasure of interviewing the real captain. I tried to give that interview, all that information, to Disney when they were making the movie, but they really wanted to make a love story. But Bernie Weber, he was the captain of that Coast Guard boat, that 36-600, which he was able to get 32 men aboard. Can you imagine that? 32 men on a 36-foot boat, plus his crew. And he got them all on board and brought them back to safety. And he gave me his hat when I interviewed him. So I treasure that hat. We also do a lot of interviews with authors, nautical books, a big item, and celebrities. And some of my best celebrities I've interviewed is Billy Joel, who's a boat builder, Florence Henderson, who was a liverboard, and you know, from the Brady Bunch.
Yep.
She passed away a couple of years ago, or last year, and the name of her boat was Miss Flo, Little Flo, or Miss Flo. So, and Paul Savino. The celebrities list is unbelievable. And just last week, I had Donnie Wahlberg and his brother Paul, because I celebrated my anniversary at their restaurant at the Hingham Shipyard Marina, Alma Nova.
Wow. Yeah, named after their mother.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anybody who watches another reality show.
Exactly.
Wahlbergers, right. Which they're there, leaps and leaps and bounds. If folks want to find out more about your show, what do you have in regards to material? I don't know if you have a website or
We have a Facebook page. I keep it simple because it's a one-man show.
It is.
But nauticaltalk.com is my website. We have four of the most recent radio programs posted, and maybe couple of dozen of some of the interviews that I've done over the years. I try to keep changing that list. And most of my interviews are only 7 to 10 minutes long.
Okay.
And I find that's a perfect
effective
match for the audience.
Well, you do a fantastic job, and it's a pleasure to listen to your program every Sunday morning and hear some of the things that are going on when it comes to out on the water and folks who are making a living out on the water. And things that are going on with stakeholders who are, you know, are supposed to be representing those folks who are working hard to bring food, you know, inland here to feed our population.
And a lot of people don't realize the recreational sector is a multi-billion-dollar industry.
It is. It's fantastic.
So we cover it all.
Anything you want to say in closing?
Farewell, calm seas, and tight lines.
There he is, the one and only Captain Lou Gaynor. You can hear him every Sunday. Nautical Talk Radio at 11 a.m. right here on 95.9 WATD. You out there who are listening on the World Wide Web, 959WATD.com. That's all the time that myself and Captain Lou have for this program. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have a good evening.